college education is one of the few things that you will pay extra to make sure that you don't actually get the product that it promises, you know? And that's because we've stopped thinking of college as an education and we've started thinking of it as a certificate. We think of it as a degree and not the actual education that you're walking out with. We think of it as a completed test, but we don't think of what the work that you went in to prepare you for that test and the kind of person that that's turned you into. So I would think more about what is the education that will challenge you and push you rather than worrying about certificates and whether this gets you a job.
I'm excited to have Dr. Ben Merkel join me today on the Plain Speech Podcast. Thanks for being with me today, Ben.
Thanks for having me.
So to start us off, the question I would like to ask you is, and this is relevant for me because I've got four teenage children. My oldest daughter, she is in college now, and I have three sons that are 17, 15, and 13. And they are, so my oldest is a junior, so we have about a year and a half, and we've been looking at schools for him. But I see a range of opinions from Christian parents. Some of them think, well, you just pick a school, decent reputation, good degree program that you can afford. If your kid's interested in it, sign them up and they'll be fine. And then on the other end, I see parents that think that colleges are nothing but pure ideological indoctrination centers, and they will certainly ruin your child's faith. So can you just give us a lay of the land? I mean, are colleges as crazy as some of the reports, or is this just overblown conspiracy theories about colleges?
So between those two opinions, I would definitely side very closely with the opinion that colleges are crazy indoctrination, you know, centers. I think that the difficulty we have is that many of us remember our own college experience, and we can remember that there was hostility to the faith and things like that. So when people talk about how scary college is now, we think that's what they're talking about. And we say, well, I made it. And in fact, that hostility to the faith is what strengthened my faith, that taught me to, you know, stand up for the faith and all that. But you're really misguided if you think that what we're talking about was what was going on in the 80s and the 90s. It's a very different world. And I think that the alarms ought to be sounding a lot louder than they are. I think colleges are pretty messed up. And I think you see, there are a number, you asked for sort of the broad picture of what's going on in colleges, and there's a number of different things that are happening. One is the indoctrination is intense. And I would, as a side note, I would argue that education is always indoctrination, or perhaps to put it more positively, it's always enculturation. That's what an education is. It's enculturation. It's just a question of, are you being enculturated in a God-honoring, you know, faithful tradition, or are you being enculturated to turn against everything your parents raised you to be? And most colleges are that kind of unfaithful enculturation. That's what's going on. The other thing that we're seeing happen quite a lot is this big question mark of whether the college degree actually provides what it promised. And I think there's a lot of suspicion that maybe college is not even necessary. And I'm highly sympathetic with that position as well. I think that what a college does, we've lied about what a college does, and we've lied in order to sell people on these degrees to get them to pay the tuition. But I think that there's a lot that we need to get through to understand what a college really does well, how to pick the right one for you, whether you should pick one for you. There's a lot of smoke that needs to be cleared in order to answer those questions correctly.
Yeah. One. There's so much there already that hopefully we'll get to flesh it out more. Because what I'm hoping is that I can take this opportunity to benefit from your experience for my own family and my own education for my sons that are still yet to make these decisions. You said that colleges promise something. What is the promise that was held out, and how has that changed?
So the promise that is being offered right now is that the college degree will get you a job. And it's put even stronger than that. It's often suggested or hinted at that without a college degree, you won't be able to get a good job. And so the college degree is this piece of paper that allows you the path onto, you know, into the world of vocation and allows you to enter it successfully, to be well paid and all of that. That's what you're told. I think that that's a total lie. And I think it honestly has undermined what education is supposed to do. So I'll walk through how it's a lie. Actually, let me back up. The reason why I think it's sold is because we're trying to get more and more kids into our schools, and we're jacking up tuition, inflating tuition, and pushing students to take out egregious amounts of student loan debt in order to pay that inflated tuition. The only way that paying that tuition makes sense is when you cast this degree as a down, like an initial investment into this salary that you're going to get. But I say it's a lie because, first of all, 60 to 70% of the people who sign up their freshman year with all that debt, only 60 to 70% are going to actually graduate. So, I mean, my joke all the time is like, can you imagine taking out a mortgage on a home with only a 60 to 70% chance of getting the home? So you don't know you're going to get the degree. Then you don't know that you're going to get the degree that you initially were talked into when you signed up in the recruiter's office. You know, you signed up to be a chemical engineer because you saw this can be this amazing salary, et cetera. And then you started taking chemistry classes and you realized, hang on, this is hard. I mean, there's a reason why that's a really high paying job, is because it's really difficult work. And a lot of the kids who sign up for these quickly transfer out. They become a business major or a parks and rec major or something like that, that is much more doable. And then it doesn't have the career that's so tightly connected to this incredible salary. But then you graduate. Let's say you graduate with that degree. What are the odds that you actually enter into the career that you majored in? Then let's go 4 or 5 years down the road. How long do you actually stay in that career? The lateral move is so common now. We don't just move up. We move laterally. I started as an engineer. I ended up as a headmaster of a classical Christian school. Or I end up, you know, people, they're adapting all the time. And the notion that you're going to get this certificate, which is going to give you this lifelong, you know, revenue stream, is just wrong. It's not how it actually works. And then go on from the flip side, go out into the workforce. Let's say that first day you show up for the job and you show up with your freshly minted college degree, you get the job that goes with the degree you got, and you walk into the office and you find out 98% of the work that they're having you do has nothing to do with anything you trained for. College. And I'm increasingly having CEOs come to me and say, listen, college students, you know, they come with these degrees that say that they're capable of these certain skills. They're clueless. They haven't, I have to start from zero and completely train them all over again. And so I just think that whole thing is kind of a farce throughout. And I think also, Our college degree used to be a much more well-rounded kind of degree that taught you to be a much more well-rounded kind of person. As we become vocationally focused, we've narrowed ourselves, but also the level of intellectual engagement that happens in the classroom has gone from here down to here. You've gone from, okay, read this, come back ready to argue with me about that. Come back ready to present your own original thoughts. Write a paper. I'm going to take it apart. Come back and debate with your classmates. Come back and be ready for a quiz that I'm going to give you, where you're going to have to write 3 pages spontaneously as an essay question, responding to something I give you. That's what you used to be doing. Now it's these very highly focused, like online modules that are so predictable, multiple choice tests that I could take half of these tests and quizzes and pass very well without having sat through one lecture, read one book. The level of engagement that is required is so low that these students don't know how to work. They don't know how to think. They don't know how to argue. They show up in the workplace. And what we're finding is these CEOs are saying, it's not, I don't need the professional skill. I could have given you that. What I need is for you to be capable of working 40 hours a week, you know, not petering out at 12. Coming to work sober and not planning on embezzling from me today, And coming to work with the ability to like think, argue, figure it out yourself, not need your hand held through everything, be able to work with a team and not turn everything dysfunctional by the end of the week. Can you come and just work? That skill is what colleges used to actually impart, but we've replaced it with these vocational skills that have actually made us incapable of working, but we're paying like three times as much for these things now. That's why I say that there's something going on in our colleges that is really undermining what we need as a nation.
That's insane just to hear that CEOs are, that's their experience.
Oh yeah. It's so common. And I think this is why you're seeing so many people now start to say, maybe you don't need a college degree. Like maybe that actually is putting you further behind rather than preparing you for the real world.
Yeah. Cause what you described that a college degree used to impart and there, you can no longer expect these things. That sounds like a grown up.
Yeah.
You can show up on time. You can, you know, wear, you know, present yourself professionally and not, you know, not expect to lounge around, but get paid top dollar for, you know, doing half-hearted work to be able to be engaged. That just sounds like an adult.
And introduction to the adult world is no longer happening on most college campuses. And I would say, this is why I say it's actually like putting you behind, because what, you know, if you were to go back 50 to 60 years, I think they started the survey in the 1960s where they would survey students on how much time they had to put into school. And it was about 40 hours a week. Your typical college student did 40 hours a week. And that's going to classes, but also studying, writing papers, et cetera. That number is now down to, I think, 17 and a half hours per week. So you still got a minimum of 12 hours in class. That means you're spending 5.5 hours to study. When if you were to go back and somebody was doing 40 hours a week and they did 12 hours of class, they did 28 hours of study. So from 28 hours down to 5.5. The college degree has been gutted of its rigor. And so we're telling these kids, here, I'm going to get you ready for the professional world. Take 4 years during which I will tell you that this is what it looks like. This is what the work week looks like. And during that time, you're going to live in this highly entitled place where it's kind of like this little resort amenity place where you live on imaginary money, your student loans and all of that. And you live in this imaginary world. You learn to be entitled. You learn to have your estimation of what is real work as low as possible. I think the frequency of the A, the letter grade A, is something like tripled over the course of time. Everybody gets an A. These are places that they're like actively subverting our ability to go and work and be productive and fruitful. And it's funny because it's labeled as you have to do this to get a job. You know, you need this piece of paper to get a job. And then you go there. What they do is they teach you, don't ever work. Don't know how to exert yourself. Don't learn how to have your ideas critiqued without you bursting into tears. And it's really backwards.
Yeah. Well, my kids go to a Christian school, like a private Christian school, and that is known for academic rigor. They really push them hard. And I think they deliver on that promise. My daughter, in her freshman year of the college she goes to, she tells me that it's easier than high school.
Oh, yeah. I hear that all the time. And it's really funny because so when I go and I talk to like a classical Christian school, the thing I'll always say is like, so the bad news is education you're getting here is ruining you for college. It's ruining you for college because you're going to show up and you're going to say, this is a joke. And part of it is because I essentially over the last like 20 years or so, education standards in the secular K-12 world have dropped so much that students that are graduating as high school seniors and going off to college, when they get to college, college has to do remedial work for at least those first 2 years. So the first 2 years, they're doing what used to be done in high school. It's not until you get to your junior year that you'll start to get to material that will challenge you and feel like it's pushing you in new ways, because they're doing remedial work that should have been accomplished in high school. But these classical schools, they're graduating students that are truly college ready, which means, and I think this is why you see so many programs where you can basically graduate from high school with your AA so that you can go straight into your junior year. Those first 2 years are increasingly knocked out really easily by different little programs because they're remedial. They really are. And that's one of the things at NSA, a lot of times I'll have people come and say, like, I've already got a year of college credit, so can I come in as a sophomore? And I'm like, you might have that credit, but you don't have sophomore level education. You need to come in as a freshman because our freshman year actually does something. And without it, you're not ready for our sophomore year. But yeah, so it's a bit of a mess.
So my second question, you've kind of already answered it, but I'll ask it again directly, just so you can speak to this if you'd like. I grew up hearing what you said, that if you want to go anywhere in life, college, that's your ticket. And it was not a guarantee. Like in my family, where all the kids went to college, it's like going to college was a real something very special. And yeah. So in my family, my sister and I, we both got college degrees. I did a MDiv at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and that was a very unusual thing in my family. Yeah. So the default option of going to college used to be, it became the default that everybody went to college, but it seems like that's not the case anymore. And that maybe a lot of people should consider whether or not college really is the best option after high school. Would you say that we should challenge that presumption?
I do think so. I think that we have oversold and undersold what a college degree is. We've oversold it in that we've said this is the necessary ticket to get into the workforce. And that's just not true. It really isn't, for all the reasons I went through before. I just don't think that's true. But I say we are underselling it because by making it about vocational certification, we've robbed it of that vital role that it can play. But a good college education is a phenomenal anchor in your life. It's some of the most formative years in your life. Are you still there? There we go. Here. Did I go like on you?
Yep. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I can still see and hear you.
Okay. You went blank on me for a moment there. So
software that I use to record, it records your part independent of mine, and then it mixes them together. So even if there's a little interruption in our stream, there's no interruption. Okay. Sorry for the distraction, but yeah, please keep going.
Okay. So it's funny because I feel like I'm arguing in opposite directions a lot of times when I talk about colleges, because on the one hand, I'm deeply dissatisfied with what colleges have become in America. On the other hand, I think that college can be something so vital and helpful. And it frustrates me when I hear critiques of colleges that don't see what we could be doing. So frequently, what I'll hear is these colleges are broken. Therefore, let's forget about college education completely. And we'll just go into the trades and forget about like the world of academia. I think that's really short-sighted. I think that a strong path of education anchors our society, our culture, our people in such important ways. Without a strong pipeline of education, I think our nation will be in dire straits. And so on the one hand, I want to demolish the certain claims that colleges are making. But part of the reason I want to demolish is because I want to recover what an education was supposed to be about. Sometimes when I'm talking to a crowd of parents, a lot of them will ask that question, why even bother with the 4 years of college? Why not just go straight off and get a career, et cetera? And I think that a lot of people should. I really think that a lot of people should. But I do think that there's a strong argument to be made for why you ought to pick a really good college to go for 4 years. And one of the arguments is, I think that the years 18 to 22 are some of the most formative years in a young person's life. As parents, because we are so focused on getting them that K-12 education, we tend to say to ourselves, okay, I've given them the foundation. They've got their worldview. They've got their Christian worldview. Their Christian faith is secure. And then because I sometimes will be convinced that this college degree is necessary for a job, and I want my son to be able to get a job, I'll be able to justify to myself sending him off to some secular state university because I'll say, he's got his foundation. Now he just needs to go get his vocational certification. He'll just go there, learn how to do the job. And what I see continually is people make that decision. And then during those 4 years, they were supposed to just be getting vocational certification. But what happens is they get their entire worldview scrambled, messed up, turned hostile against their parents' worldview. And everything is undermined during those 4 years. And the reason is because we think that those 4 years are, you know, once they hit 18, they're done. But I'll ask you, during the years 18 to 22, were those the inconsequential years in your life? Or were those some really important, informative years? Anytime I ask that question, almost everybody suddenly has to go, oh yeah, from 18 to 22, that's when I became a Christian, or I came to own my faith in a much more fundamental way. That's when I figured out who I was going to marry, what kind of husband I wanted to be. That's when I did figure out my career path, my theological identity. All of those things happened in 18 to 22. And to put those years in the middle of an institution that is faithful, robust, challenging, that is discipling you in a healthy direction, it's transformative. It has a disproportionate effect on the rest of your life. So we survey our graduates at 5 years and at 15 years after graduation from NSA. Mm-hmm. When I combine all those results, we have a less than 3% divorce rate in our student body. You compare that to the national average, what, 60% or something like that. It's just stark. And I think the reason is because when you take those 4 years and you live them in a certain kind of community, it has a disproportionate effect on the rest of your life. And so I do think college can be really important, really influential when it's done right. I also think most of the arguments for college are empty and worth dismissing and seeing through. And so there's a long answer to the question that you felt like had already been answered.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you have criticisms of colleges that can be made by parents or people that are observing, valid, legitimate criticisms of what college is, but insufficient acknowledgement of what college could be or should be.
Yeah.
So it's right to criticize the one, but we also need to retrieve what was lost in the other.
Build the other. Yeah. And I think the classical Christian education movement is probably the single biggest win that the Christian church in America has had over the last century. It's the only place I see in our culture where the church is just like, we're gaining ground, really, really gaining ground, such that the world is now trying to come and take these from us because of how powerful these little schools are. We've done that K to 12. We now need that for 13 to 16. It's time to build that next layer. NSA is one piece of that, but I think we need a lot more than just NSA. Yeah.
So can you maybe walk us through a decision tree? Maybe the first decision is, does my son or daughter go to college or not? And then from there, how do they choose a school? And then mixed up in there, obviously, is like, I think part of the problem that you're identifying there is like a 17-year-old, 18-year-old may not have a clue what they want to be doing when they're 58 years old. And so they're having to make lifelong decisions. So like, how would you help somebody sort of filter these down?
Sure. I think you're right about that. Like, that's another reason why I feel like this idea that you're signing up for your career at 18, like what 18-year-old is ready to say, this is what I am for life. Now I say that and it's not true because there are certain kids who do know. I think that I joke. It's like, I think there's a special charismatic gift that goes to doctors and engineers where they get this revelation when they're like 7 or 8 years old that you will be a doctor, you'll be an engineer. They just know it. They know it and they never have any question about it. And they are just on this path. And I get that. That's really great. But that's not what 80% of us get. 80% of us have no clue. I think at 40, I was still really wondering, what am I supposed to be doing? It takes a while to and you hop from career to career as it all kind of comes together. But I would say the first thing when you ask that question, the first thing I would say would be really do not like one size fits all advice. And when it comes to education, I think people are reckless in giving one size fits all advice. Particularly dads will do this with their kids, especially with their sons, where it's like, here's what happened to me and it turned out great because, well, look at me. And so here's what you must do. Like this is what works and you need to follow my path. What you're doing when you do that is you're giving one size universal advice drawn from, you know, a pool of one, you know, here's what happened to me. Therefore, everybody, this is how it's done. This is what you do. And we have to realize that God makes everybody different. And even our own kids who share in our genetic material. And so they often do display great similarities and they share our proclivities, but sometimes God does something crazy in the genetic mix and your kid wants to go in some completely different direction. And so I would be really hesitant and careful and slow to overscript. Here's how it all has to play out. I would say, you know, that first question, should they go to college? I see some kids who they didn't learn in school. Some of us learn in school. Some of us, a school is exactly what we needed. I thrive in a classroom. I do. It's what I'm good at. And give me a academic program. I can ace it and I will walk out of there ready to do things because of it. That's how I'm made. But I've seen kids who that's just not how they learn. They need to be hands-on. They need to be out in the workforce. They just need to be in the trades, something like that. I think that that's great and we shouldn't put a stigma on that. So my first question would be, how do they do in a classroom setting? Does a classroom work for them? Some of them though, like, when I graduated from high school, I almost flunked out of two different colleges, but that was because I was just being a little lazy bum and I needed to be sent to college in order to learn to work because the academic potential was there. I just didn't have the discipline. So I went, I learned the discipline. So I wouldn't just say, okay, he didn't have a very good GPA. He shouldn't go to college. I would want to do a deeper dive. Like, do we know, like, Is this somebody who needs pushed, needs to be challenged, push him into a competitive academic program? Or is this somebody who just needs pliers, a screwdriver, they need to be go out, get to work and get going? I would want to ask that question first. And then you say, okay, I think this kid needs to go to college. The next question I would ask is he one of those like 20%, the ones who I joke got the charismatic gift where God said, you are an engineer? Those kids, send them to engineering school, find a really good engineering school, send them to an engineering school. Engineering is, you know, and same with, well, medicine is a little bit different, but engineering, I get it. You need a very particular set of courses, right, certifications to get there. And that's just what they're going to have to do. So if you want to find a good town where a college that has a strong Christian community that they can mature inside of while they go to school, et cetera. But I think they should go there. But if you say, okay, they're more nebulous than that. They kind of know generally the sorts of things they want to do. Those are the kinds of kids who I feel like an NSA is made for. We take them, we challenge them, we mature them, we make them well-rounded, and then we push them into internships in the chosen, you know, professions that they want to be maturing in. That's where I think an NSA can fit really well. And their own NSA is not the only one. There are other, you know, there's some other solid colleges out there, Grove City, Patrick Henry, Hillsdale. You've got a number of other schools that are like that, that I think you'd be good and responsible with sending your kids to one of those schools.
So what I'm hearing, correct me if I'm wrong, that there is some of these schools are really solid in doing what would be classically a liberal arts degree. You're getting broad exposure to lots of different fields that can equip you for whatever life throws at you in a way but it isn't tied to a specific industry that requires a specialty.
The schools that I mentioned would all be giving you a specialized degree. NSA is the only one there that does a general liberal arts undergraduate. So that's kind of a NSA distinctive. The schools I mentioned would all have you pick a focus, but all of them would be faithful, you know, moral. They would not trying to indoctrinate you against the faith. And I would say, even if you get a specialized degree, if you understand what you're trying to do with that, it still can work. So let's say you get a philosophy degree or a history degree or something like that. If you understand that I'm not trying to become a career philosopher, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to sharpen my mind to think critically such that I can be an excellent leader. I talked to a guy a while ago who single-handedly built and managed the largest network of hospitals in the US. So very wealthy, successful businessman. And I asked him, I was trying to figure out what was the path that got you there. So I assumed he started as a doctor. Like, how else do you get to be at the top of the hospital? You must be, you're a doctor. And then you move to administration, whatnot. And he was like, oh, no. A doctor could never build what I built. I was a philosophy major. And
went to the philosophy factory and
But he was like, his point was like, no, philosophy taught me to think critically, to make fine decisions, to be able to hear exactly what's going on and to sort through it all. And those critical thinking skills that I got there, that's what I needed to do this work. And so if you attach the name of the degree to the career you're supposed to have, it just gets silly. And I would just need to stop thinking like that. I think more in terms of like, college is a time where I drill down in certain intellectual disciplines. I mentioned that I almost flunked out of two different schools. I was bombing all of my classes. And it was during that time that I had kind of like an evangelical transformation. I don't know that I was converted, but it was like, I decided actually it's time for me to live like a Christian. And so the sin that I most needed to mortify was intellectual laziness. It was just, I wouldn't go to class. If I went to class, I would just fall asleep and I didn't work. So I needed to learn to work. So for me, chemistry classes were the classes that were most kicking my rear end. And so I kept enrolling in chemistry classes again and again until I could get an A in chemistry. By the time I got there, I had taken the full scope of chemistry. So I ended up with a chemistry education degree, and I never touched a test tube or balanced equation from the day I walked out of college on. I've never touched it, but I still think it was extremely valuable because chemistry taught me to learn how to sit and think clearly over a prolonged period of time on a question that I was wrestling with, where you'd have a chemistry problem that would take 4 or 5 pages where you're writing with pencil, erasing, and you erase it so many times, you've almost erased through the page. Those kinds of problems, learning to think at that level, then it was the kind of conditioning that my brain needed to prepare me to do, well, sermon prep. Sermon prep, you know, like go in the room, you're going to be at this for 8 hours and it needs to make sense. And you need to solve something with this. And I think a lot of guys don't have the discipline to focus and actually do that kind of work. Writing my dissertation, writing books requires that kind of rigor. And so I've never used chemistry, but I've used what I learned in chemistry all the time. And I think if you think that way about college, then you start to realize, find something interesting, find something challenging, give yourself to it. When you graduate, maybe you'll keep doing that. Maybe you'll do something completely different, but push yourself with that college education. Worry less about the certification, the little certificate that you get. Worry less about those things. Worry more about the education itself. I think it's funny. Education is one of the few things where a college student will pay an obscene amount of money to enroll in a class. They would pay even more to get a good grade for that class without doing any work. You know, they'll then pay more to get somebody else to do the work for them, to cheat and whatever. College education is one of the few things that you will pay extra to make sure that you don't actually get the product that it promises, you know? And that's because we've stopped thinking of college as an education and we've started thinking of it as a certificate. We think of it as a degree and not the actual education that you're walking out with. We think of it as a completed test, but we don't think of what the work that you went in to prepare you for that test and the kind of person that that's turned you into. So I would think more about what is the education that will challenge you and push you rather than worrying about certificates and whether this gets you a job.
Yeah. It sounds like an obstacle course. It's like you've got to navigate a few of these obstacles. And then at the end of this, you'll get the certificate that basically says, yeah, you've got enough maturity to at least follow through with something relatively difficult. And that's what you're qualified for, because the education itself may or may not translate into the field that you'll be doing.
And yeah, there's a certain signal that it sends that you're somebody that can put up with nonsense for 4 years.
Right.
There is a certain sort of signal that it sends. And I think that I think that there is something to the signal argument. I think that somebody who's gone through a rigorous education and come out with a solid degree, the signal that sends to me is not so much that, oh, he has this degree, now he can perform this job. The signal it sends is he has this degree, therefore he has this kind of mind. He is adaptable in these ways. I can expect that I could give him this job. He'll be able to figure it out. That's, I think, there is a way in which I think it should be a valid signal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there are, whenever people graduate college and they enter into the workforce, what I hear people report back to me is that even if it's the same general field, what they're actually doing is very loosely related to their degree program. And so it's like what the employers are looking for is, it's like, it's almost like just the fact that you did something and saw it all the way through to completion, that that's really what matters, because like we'll train you how to do our particular software system. We'll train you how to do this particular task.
Well, that's the thing, is that if you have a professor that's teaching you, you know, a marketing class or something like that, the fact that this person is a full-time college professor tells you right there, they're no longer in the industry. They're not actually doing what's happening now. And one of the things we've seen is how fast the workforce is adapting and transforming so fast right now. New careers, new ways of doing things. You're not, when you are in college, you're not getting what's going on in the workforce right now. You're getting what was going on in the workforce 15 to 20 years ago. And so that doesn't have to be a problem. If what you're learning is how to be a certain kind of person, then that's okay. But if you're supposedly learning how they do it in the workforce, then it's all going to be retaught as soon as you get out there.
Yeah. Do you see any college degree programs and by extension fields of employment that you would say these are too ethically problematic? Christians should not study these programs or should not enter into these fields. There's the obvious ones, but maybe some that may not be so obvious.
Yeah, well, it depends on what you mean by that. If you mean like that subject in and of itself is so problematic that nobody ought to be doing that, I would be a little bit reluctant to have too many things there, just because I feel like the earth is the Lord's, the fullness thereof. It's all for us to take. But there are certainly certain departments that are so far gone that, you know, if you're in a film study something, you're lost. Most of the arts are really lost. Now, I think that we ought to still be making films. I think we ought to be producing art, but I think that we ought to not be in their system. We ought to be building our own system for doing it. Music departments are notoriously bad for the enculturation that's going on there. I think, art, music. And by saying that, I still think, I mean, NSA has a music department. We're trying to build something to counter what's going on there. Excuse me. I think that the places, you know, like your engineering departments are still pretty, like, it's just engineers. Engineers are hilarious. There's no ulterior motives. They're just numbers, you know. there's a certain safety there, but there's also, it's also soulless in a way. Excuse me. Oh, really struggling. You might have to do a bunch of editing on this one.
That's no problem. Just while you take a moment there, some of the things I have in mind is there are, you mentioned the arts. So if, yes, we want to reclaim the arts for Christ. And historically, I studied music as a child and, you know, learned Bach, and like very much his music was written for the glory of God explicitly. He was thinking, I want to write music that glorifies God. Similar with film and, you know, visual arts. Right. But these are so ideologically captured that for a Christian to get training from those that are at the top of their field, they're going to be encountering a degree of ideological capture that could be a good test for them, but they're also young and impressionable. And it could be a vulnerability where they could be deceived. And so I think that where we are right now in culture, as far as following the trajectories that got us to this point and where things may go in the future, we have new decisions to make, new challenges that we have to figure out what is wise. It may not be that it's sin to do this or that, but it could be, you know, the wisdom here, I could see, you know, 10 ways it could go, 8 of them could go bad and 2 of them could go good. You have to think very carefully about what are the options before us.
Yeah. So I think there's two different things there. First, I think that as we've seen our schools shift in a very bad direction, what happened was you had the gutting of the liberal arts. And as the liberal arts were gutted, they were detached from the Western Christian tradition, which means that they were detached from the objectivity of a transcendent God, that there were objective standards that we were dealing with. The sciences managed to maintain objectivity because of the illusion of numbers. Numbers are easier to get objective on really fast. Words take a lot more work to get objective on. You can be, there is an objective standard to beauty, poetry, to painting, to music. There are objective standards, but you can't express them in the way you can with a simple mathematical problem. And so as the liberal arts were gutted of the faith, they lost objectivity, which meant they also lost all of their rigor. And then they were churned in this very faithless direction. So now if you're a liberal arts major, the rigor is low and the likelihood that you're just being indoctrinated into something foreign and hostile to the biblical worldview is really high. It's kind of proportionally gets less like that as you move to the more objective sciences. It's still there over here. It's just not as strong as it is here. So I think you have to ask yourself, like, what is it you're trying to study? And you want to have somebody who's teaching you in a way that is going to reinforce that biblical worldview. I do think the second thing I was going to say is, I do think that we can make a distinction between your undergraduate and your graduate degrees. I think the undergraduate degree is disproportionately influential, and it has such a profound time. And if you do that in a place where you can maximize faithfulness, where you're really being, you walk out of your undergraduate solid in your faith, married, beginning a family with clarity about where you're headed next, that kind of person is in a really good place to take on a challenge in a graduate program that might be in a place that is a bit threatening to the faith. So I did my master's at Oxford. And I remember when I went, I did a master's degree and I did a doctorate at Oxford. When I got to Oxford, I was married. I had 5 kids. I was already an elder at Christ Church and had been a minister there. My gravitas was very different. I knew who I was. I knew what I was doing. I knew what I believed, and I was not shaken. If I did you know, started to have questions when I would come home at night and have five kids jump on me and a wife and maybe dinner. It all got fixed really quickly because I remember I know who I am. I know what I'm about. And I was able to do well there without, I impacted them. They didn't change me. And that was really great. But I remember telling my wife one day, if I had come here as an undergraduate, I don't think I would have made it. I could have graduated the program, but I don't know that my faith would have made it. The Oxford is a unique place. And as you can imagine, and it goes to your head really quickly and it messes with people. And I've seen how these kinds of institutions, young evangelical kids that were bright kids that did really well in their K-12 classical school, and then they get some amazing college opportunity and they go there and they encounter that and it just destroys them. So I would say, you know, if we do want to take back some of these elements of culture, music, art, all of that, but I would say let's make sure we do it in a way where we make the changes instead of us being changed. We be the ones who are leading. And so I would encourage prioritize faithfulness in that undergraduate time. And then when you've got a strong foundation, that's where you can do something adventurous for your graduate degrees. I've got couple kids off doing various graduate degrees right now. It's fun watching them be this new presence there.
Yeah. Are there any blind spots that you've heard from parents or students that maybe things that they should be thinking about as they're preparing to send their kids to college and life beyond that they should be thinking about, but maybe they miss going into it, that you can give them a heads up in advance?
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly stuff we've already talked about. So the one would be, don't have a one-size-fits-all advice for your kids. Understand God's going to do different things. It may be a different path. It may be a different time for them than it was for you. Be okay with that. The other is be less scared for your kids. I look back at my life and, you know, right out of high school, I joined the Marine Corps Reserves. And you know, I remember getting into rock climbing, going parachuting and doing all these crazy things. And I just wonder, how did my mom sleep at night? Now that I'm a parent and I look back and see all this crazy that I did, and I wonder, like, how did they sleep knowing I was doing all these stupid things and graduating from college, having no clue what I wanted to do, spending years trying to figure all of that out. But I see clearly God's hand in it. He was directing all of it. And I want to, as a father, have the same confidence in God's providence for my kids, you know, that my mom was able to do for me. I want to be able to do that for them. What I see a lot of times are particularly dads who are white knuckled about, like, you've got to be on this path or you're not going to be okay. Take a break and trust God's providence. The other thing I would say is prioritize faithfulness over finance. Make sure that you are, God, Jesus said, seek first the kingdom of God and all these things will be added unto you. If you want all of these things added unto you, seek first the kingdom of God. Prioritize giving them faithfulness above all else. I see parents frequently going, yeah, I want him to be Christians, but he needs a job, he needs success. And so I'm going to keep Christianity kind of in the glove compartment of the box of the car that he's driving in, but his car has got to be driving to this career path. It's got to be going here. I don't know how many times, it's really sad. I've seen a number of times where there'll be a family that's looking at NSA and you'll see a kid who's like, I want to be around this kind of faith. I want to be nurtured in this kind of environment. But I'll see dads who are like, yeah, but I don't know if you were a CPA, you'd have this kind of, you know, revenue. And they'll subvert their kid's own desire to grow in godliness on this altar of income. And they send them off to that, you know, business degree, whatever. And 3 years later, the kid is switched to a queer studies major and is identifying as something else. And it's like, wow. I mean, you push them in this really unfaithful direction and you don't see that you're doing it with your own lack of confidence in God's promises. So I would say, as a parent, prioritize faithfulness. And maybe that means they don't need to go to college. Maybe God's calling them or somewhere else. But if you see them wanting to lean into their faith and growing in godliness, that's what you want to push them in and nurture.
Yeah. I can't think of a better word to end on than that. Like, that is the ultimate duty of every parent is to pass on the faith to the children, to raise them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Yeah. And college is part of that. That's a great word.
Absolutely.
Any final thoughts or ways that people can keep track with what you're doing?
Yeah, if you go to NSA's webpage on the NSA blog, I'm doing a series of videos. Actually, you can go to NSA's YouTube channel and follow us there. I'm doing these kind of like 3 to 5 minute, once every couple of weeks, I'll do a little clip. And I'm slowly working through a lot of the questions that we're talking about. The first dozen or so are about what's going on in college finances and what are the tricks that are being played on you? How did this whole thing go so screwy? And then I'm moving into, you know, how to think about degree programs and that sort of thing. So if you want to hear more about the principles I'm talking about, I would go to that YouTube channel and you can walk through it, series of videos.
Fantastic. I appreciate you, your time today and sharing your wisdom with us. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having
thank
me.
You very much. Yeah. And thank you for tuning in to the Plain Speech Podcast. We'll see you next time.